John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
8 minutes after 8 o'clock, and Bill Rock, thanks for the intro. It is indeed a Friday, and time for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He is here. First, good morning, sir, and a happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much.
A major milestone this week.
As we were talking, 25,569 or 70 days.
The chance to get yourself out of bed.
Through. And if you think about it, I'm unlikely to be able to do that, so I'm probably more than halfway to wherever I'm going.
Well, let us hope.
And there are disagreements as to where that's going to be.
Depending on who you speak with,
absolutely.
Right? That's funny. Well, anyway, congratulations on your birthday. We're going to talk with the school's chancellor, Dennis Walcott.
You should. He did a great thing here.
In just a little bit, in the top of our next break, the second break, about the teacher evaluation thing. So let's go someplace else right at the top here. And I guess, unfortunately, another cop shot. I mean, this story is way too often told.
There are more guns than people in America. Virtually every cop that gets shot, almost every murder in the country, there's 34 a day and a lot more shootings. Almost all of them are done with illegal guns. Why are they illegal? Because federal law says you cannot sell a gun publicly or privately to somebody who has psychiatric problems or a criminal record, or is a minor, or whatever. And yet the federal government, after passing a tough law, and they do this all the time, they pass a tough law to say, we're going to stop this. And then, of course, they don't fund any enforcement. So for the other people who don't want it, say, don't worry about it. We buffaloed them. And that's the way a lot of government works. And everybody has big headlines, isn't it wonderful they passed a law? But then nothing.
Nothing happens.
The same thing is true.
That's where the cynicism of America comes.
In New York City, we require you to work for, if you're able-bodied, for food stamps. Federal government passes a law, you got to work. But then cities can waver out of it by just signing a piece of paper. We've never signed that piece of paper. But it's the ways that both sides can get what they want. Mm-hmm. Now, a cynic would say that's the only way you should pass a piece of legislation. Cynic would say, what's the point? You don't do anything. That's
right.
Exactly right. But, this has got to stop. And there was a columnist in one of the newspapers today you should read on guns. And I thought he had it dead right. This is not a civilized society that lets kids carry around guns, and people that are not on people that are on the no-fly list, they can get a gun. You can't fly, but you can have a gun. And there's this constant battle to let everybody carry guns, no matter where.
How about the ones on campuses? Carry guns.
I don't
on
know
campuses.
how you were on campus, but I don't think that
there
I
were
was
times
mature.
You didn't, I
was not mature enough or sober enough. Sometimes,
it's insane.
But the issue is, if you don't vote with the NRA, they go after your ability to earn a living. They say they're going to work for your opponent, and they're not going to give you any money for your campaign. And you have to make the decision. Do you take their money and vote their ways and hope that your constituents look at everything else you do and not that? Or do you say, I'm going to stand up and be principled? And I've said this before. If you want to end this, what you have to do is you have to go and publicly, it may not be legal responsibility, but you could make the case that anybody that facilitates kids and drug addicts and people with psychiatric problems getting guns is complicit in the crimes that they do with those guns and in the deaths of the people that they kill. And that's it sounds cold and hard, but I don't know how the people who are fighting all this look in a mirror. I don't know how they'd explain to the rest of their family if one of their family was killed with a illegal gun. And you say, it's all going to stop. It never comes home to them. And so all of a sudden you get a congresswoman shot in the head and they want to vote money for bulletproof vests. I mean,
and I'm not sure, and you, because you and I have talked about this at great length over the last almost ten years.
You should read Mike Lupica's column.
Yeah, I saw it this morning.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart guy. I don't agree with him on everything, but he has just been so right on this, and he understands that this really is a scourge.
I don't know how you change it, though. I mean, it's because the end, as you go back.
Well,
it is,
if Mike keeps writing his column, maybe some people will read it and pay attention. And he's a well-respected columnist.
But if you don't have the politician that doesn't fold to the NRA's pressure that you just described, if you don't have somebody that puts right before, job, what are you going to do? You can't. You got 536 people in Washington.
You can't worry about the 536. What you've got to do is take a look at your congressman and your senator, and say, where are you? I'm not going to worry about everybody else. I can't worry about anybody else. I'm going to work for your opponent unless you do what's right to protect my kids and the cops on the corner who are putting their lives on the line to protect me. That's my number one issue. If surviving isn't a number one issue, I don't know what else. I mean, let's get serious here. If you remember, 32 people were killed at Virginia Tech, and it dominated the press for a long time. 34 people get killed every day today in America, and nobody pays any attention. It's hard to explain why. But you should call your congressman and say, this is my key issue. And let me tell you, I don't care what your opponent, if your opponent is worse on guns than you, I don't care. I'm going after you because you're not voting the right way. And I'll deal with your opponent when I get that man or woman into office. Because that's exactly what the NRA does. You say, my opponent's going to be worse for the NRA than me. Therefore, they say, I don't care. We're going after you.
And then you've got to make the decision. You got to make the choice.
And you don't have to make the choice, but I don't know how you're going to face your family if somebody in the family is killed and you didn't do everything you could to prevent it.
All right, teacher evaluation, the subject up next. We'll include the Chancellor, Dennis Wolcott, in that. Speaking of inclusion, we would like to have you part of our show today. 800-321-0710 if you'd like to get online. In fact, we got some folks already in the queue this morning. 800-321-0710. This portion of the program made possible by the Heart Institute. Visit bypasstheordinary.com to learn about the McGinn technique. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you here on
Friday. We're going to talk to Dennis in a minute, but I've been thinking during the commercial break about Mike Lupica's article. You really question why some of the other columnists don't get it as well. They write about all sorts of drivel, and this guy's writing about saving lives. And, I think people should listen, should read this guy and listen to him.
Yeah.
And the news is doing a service by publishing him.
Well, every time I talk about it
do you have him on the radio?
I've never talked to Mike about this, but I bring up the subject myself, and the phone calls are predictable. You get the pro-gun people, and they say that
there's nothing wrong with it. The Second Amendment gives you a right to carry guns. But the Supreme Court has said repeatedly, reasonable restrictions are appropriate and consistent with the law. That's not what the Founding Fathers meant, and nobody suggests that a guy who's got psychiatric problems running around screaming, I'm going to kill everybody, should be given a gun, or given a kid who's, had a couple of joints and a few beers that he didn't need, and he's out there with a gun, or somebody that, 5 years old or 10 years old. There are kids with 10 years old that have guns.
It's insane.
And people with long criminal records, again and again and again. One of the cop that was killed in Ficosi, I think it was that one, but it's with three now, where the perp had this long record of violence, including trying to kill people.
And ends up with a gun, but the gun is illegal, and that's what you want. That's what we need to stop, and that's what you want to do as well. Yeah, Dennis Wolcott, Chancellor of the New York City School System, is on the telephone. Pick up your headphone right there, Mr. Mayor. Dennis, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning to both of you.
Congratulations, Dennis. You weren't the only one, but you had an enormous amount to do with this, and that'll be part of your legacy, Dennis.
And, Mr. Mayor, I'm at a school right now, matter of fact.
So. You're a great human being. Trying to make up for your poor education as a kid. kid? Or
always. You know, we talk about that on a regular basis. You're a public school student as well.
I am. And the teachers, if they were alive today, would be gagging.
Well, no, let me just tell you this quick thing. So I'm out of school, and we're going to talk about a very serious topic at the PS-174, but then I went to several classrooms to talk to the teachers, to say hello, and there's one teacher here who also went here as a student. And she had a picture on her door of her at the school back then. So I did our favorite exercise, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
And I counted the number of students in the class in her picture.
How many?
There were 33 in this particular class. And I know I counted my picture when I was at a public school back then, and it was probably 33, 34.
Yeah, I remember, Dennis and I have had this conversation, because I remember, and I asked my mother a number of times, I remember five rows of eight. So that was 40 kids. Now, there were always two or three seats
and
at the back.
And what's the number today, on average?
23-ish.
23, depending on the grade. 23, 25, and some there's 27, and maybe...
What about the overcrowding I hear about?
Well, I mean, there are some schools.
Yeah,
I mean, the reality is that there are some schools that are extremely overcrowded because
Last night, Dennis, you'll love this. Last night, I meet somebody, did a book party for Reid Hoffman, who's this big venture cab. He started LinkedIn and a whole bunch of these companies and can be very helpful to New York in bringing jobs here. And anyway, some woman comes up to me and says, did I have any advice for her? Her kids, two kids, they haven't heard yet and won't hear for another couple months whether they got into the public schools they want. But she's got to make a decision. They've also been accepted at a private school, and the private schools want a deposit now, and it's non-refundable. Does she put the deposit down now for the private schools or gamble for her first choice to be the public schools? And I've heard before from other people, the public schools are the first choice. In not every case, but in lots, private schools are the backup. Just think how that's changed in the last 10 years.
Dramatically.
And Dennis and Joel and everybody else, you know, they've all had...
And I mean, the teachers, we have great teachers here. I mean, and our teachers are doing a masterful job. I mean, when I walked around at this school this morning, and I met some of the teachers, and the enthusiasm, the excitement for their children, and making sure their children are learning is just tremendous. And we have to talk about that. And unfortunately, in this particular case, I got a situation where we had a teacher who did something that is totally incorrect.
You have 75,000 teachers.
Well, gentlemen, I have to ask you about this. We've talked about the 40% of teacher evaluation, according to this deal, will be done on test scores. 60% will be done in another way.
By the principal.
But that's the principal.
But, John, your boss looks at your ratings and looks at you.
I have no issue with any of that. My question is, and I want to know if you have any issues or concerns about arbitration that is built into this deal at the back end.
This one that's really the difference, because the evaluation, whether you base it on one thing or another, in the end, a lot of it's subjective, and it should be. That's the way we are judged
in life. That's evaluation
That's right. And people who they complain they don't want more tests, and then they don't want subjective judgment. So, okay, thank you. You can't have it both ways. But I think the answer is this deal that was negotiated, Dennis and Michael Asher and all the people for the administration, and in all fairness, Michael Mulgrew and his staff on the UFT, and then the governor providing a venue and some advice and some cajoling, that's fine. There's a lot of credit to go around here. But in the end, the deal is that you fundamentally, Dennis, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to get evaluated twice, two Septembers in a row. If you get unsatisfactory the first time, there's 13% of the total unsatisfactories that the union can do one thing and the other, 87% another, and the second time there's no appeal, basically.
So so the boss is right, and basically the ineffectives, as we call it, they get 13%, and the 13% is not based on teacher performance. Mr. Mulgrew and the union felt that some teachers may have been basically harassed by principals, so they wanted to carve out a portion of the teachers who may claim being harassed. So
that's the 13%.
That's the 13%, and so it's not based on teacher performance at all.
It's 13% of the unsatisfactory,
correct.
So it's a very small percentage of total.
Exactly.
Is it perfect? No, but it's a heck of a lot better than right now, where it can take years.
I understand.
And then that second year of ineffective, then if the validator and the principal rate that teacher ineffective, then the presumption really falls on the teacher to prove that they're not ineffective. And that's a major, major change from the current system. And so it's not just the change of the SNU, it's a change of where presumption is. And before, we would have to prove it. Now the teacher has to prove that they're not ineffective.
John, let me bring it back to personal. you have exactly the same relationship with your boss. He looks at your ratings, which are numbers. He makes a subjective judgment. If he judges one way and you think you're wrong, you've got to convince him.
Correct. No.
This is the same thing, the way the rest of us all work.
That's why I was looking for the clarity on this, because it seems from at least just the reading of the short story that you've really got sort of a speed bump again.
No, and it's a few small things that have to be worked out, and I guess everybody can say, well, it doesn't go in effect until you work those out. But given the monies involved and given the governor's commitment and everybody else's, we'll get through this reasonably.
Do you have an expectation of when this would be implemented?
It has to be by January.
Correct.
Or you lose monies. If you want to save 1 year in teacher evaluations, it has to be done in the next few weeks.
Oh, okay.
Really? Yeah, so we want to make it effective in September. So as the mayor indicated, we got to sit down and talk with the union, resolve those sticking points, and we're committed to do that. And I think one of the other pieces that hasn't gotten a lot of attention with what's called the 30-20A process, which is basically the termination process. Part of this agreement also allows for us to have a more speedier and effective 30-20A process. And that, to me, is something that's also a major change that will benefit generations of students, because those teachers who are rated ineffective now for 2 years will hopefully be out of the system a lot sooner.
Right. There's also a provision in the existing contract that's been there for decades, which has never been used, which we are about to start using, which lets the administration, lets Dennis, with some reviews in the schools and public hearings and that sort of thing, but lets you change up to 50% of the teachers in the schools. There's roughly 33, it could be a few less, but roughly 33, where the Board of Regents said these schools are, you don't want to send your kids to them. We have to do something. And this was money that, remember, it was $58 million that we had a potential of losing. But they say if we use this process, we'll qualify for that money. And that gives us the ability for the next 2 years to do the same. We can do the same thing next year with a whole bunch more schools. And so that's an impetus for everybody to come together. And let's use the process that was negotiated and agreed to yesterday rather than stretching it out. If you stretch it out another year, the city or the Board of Ed, the Department of Education, Dennis, has the ability to change out a lot of poorly performing teachers. And the best thing would be if we get to the new system, because then if a teacher gets ranked unsatisfactory, you can work with that teacher and help them improve their skills, and hopefully they'll turn into good teachers. Keep in mind, we have a big investment in them,
and
so you want to do that.
And it also ties into the mayor's state of the city, because with the new categories, it's highly effective, developing, and ineffective. And what the mayor had proposed in his state of the city is for those teachers who qualify for highly effective 2 years in a row, they're available to get an increase in their salary.
And we still have to negotiate that with the union.
And that's
a chance to do that, because now Dennis has negotiated, and Mike with Michael Mulgrew, a system where and the governor expediting it. There's a lot of credit here. I want to make sure everybody, we say thank you to everybody. And Merrill Tisch, incidentally, and John King at the Board of Regents, couldn't have been done without them as well. So everybody participated in this. But as Dennis is right, we will at least have the tools to now negotiate with the union and see if we can't get bonuses for the best. And we have a system where for the next two, or if it gets stretched out 3 years, to replace some of the worst teachers. Unfortunately, there's not the ability to retrain in the same sense. We'd be better off at getting all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed in the thing that was announced in the papers today, get that going in the next 4 weeks, because then it will be a lot easier. For the first, you will only have to use this 18D process for 2 years rather than 3 years.
Mulgrew says that he's going to fight you on closing the 33 schools. What's the status of that?
Every time, people fight on everything. We had the NAACP unbelievably sue us to stop closing schools where proficiency level in some things was at the single digits. Mm-hmm. But in the end, the courts basically always held that the administration was elected to run the school system under state law. Dennis Wolcott's the chancellor. He should make the decisions, and that let's get on with it. And I think at this point, there'd be a lot of pressure from the governor's office and from the newspapers and from the parents and the teachers. Let's just, we have a deal, whether you like it or not. Dot the I's, cross the T's, and let's do it.
John, before you go to break, our goal, and the mayor is very clear about this, is to have highly effective schools throughout the entire city. The point that you talked about earlier with the demand and the overcrowding, we want parents to have their children attend our schools. I want to make sure that every school throughout the city is a school that you, the mayor, I, and all parents want to send their children to. I conducted a joint public hearing at a school, and the school had a proficiency level that was ridiculous, ridiculously low. And we cannot afford to have those types of schools in our system. And we have a responsibility to support them, to work with our teachers, to develop them. But when that fails, we have a responsibility to either to phase them out or, as the mayor indicated, put in place a system that's in our collective bargaining agreement that allows us to replace up to 50% of the teachers to make sure we have high-quality schools throughout the entire city, and having quality choices for our parents are key to the system of reward.
You know, I think the takeaway here is everybody participated. We should get the I's dotted, T's crossed now so it takes place. It starts in 2 years. And we have a system in place that's in the union contract that is enforceable that we will use for the next 2 years to where the proficiency in the schools is terrible. Do something about it. You just can't sit around. And there's just no excuse not to.
All right, Chancellor, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. We'll talk again
real
soon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Thank you both. We're going to go to a break here. And again, I'll make a reminder that if you'd like, I've got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710 here at 833. More news with Joe Bartlett.
Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We continue here, and let me see. We've got one line open, 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 21 before 9 o'clock. I have to ask you about the church groups in the public schools holding religious classes. A decision was made last week after 16 years of litigation and discussion over this to not allow that, to have that end as of what, this coming Sunday, I guess.
Was supposed to be this Sunday, although now we have...
There's a 10-day stay that a federal judge has thrown out in the middle of all of this. How do we ever move? I disagree with your decision, but that's okay. But the decision was made. How do we ever move on if we at every turn a lawsuit comes?
Well, you know, if the law gives you an issue, you have a right to be heard before a judge who can make a decision, and then there's an appeals process. I guess in the end, you don't really blame the judges, although some go overboard. This is a very respected federal judge. But it's when you draft the laws. Nobody thinks about the implication of the laws. The law says, for example, you have to provide a particular service. Well, they don't specify what happens if that service has to be delivered on the moon and it would cost $1 trillion to get there to do it. It's an exaggeration, but I want something that's so ridiculous that it proves the point. And that's not the way laws are written. The answer is they make the laws. It's like everything legislators pass, levels of checks and balances. Every one of them cost money and takes time and has a whole staff and a review process, and then there's litigation about it and that sort of thing. And it sounds fine. Yes, we should have more oversight, more of this, more of that, but there's a cost of every one of these things. And some people would argue that in other societies they don't have all of the checks and balances, and I would argue that in a lot of those cases they should have more. But it's, I think it's a legitimate case to say, are we, as you point out, in a situation where everything is litigated,
every single thing,
and then appealed, no matter what it is. And so, you know, I look back and I say, okay, you've been at this for 10 years. Could you have gotten more done? An awful lot of the things we do take years because once you do it, you're sued. Closing schools. You know, in the end, you win virtually everyone, but it just during that time, there's a bunch of kids who don't get an education that's going to prepare them for life, and you never make up that time.
What do your lawyers tell you about this stay, the 10-day stay? Will the church groups be allowed to have religious services this coming Sunday?
No, you haven't.
Is everything just off the table at the moment?
I think you would probably not get, they would not overturn Judge Fressler's injunction that quickly. She's very respected, and she would get a hearing.
But the stay, doesn't it allow them to keep the status quo?
Yes, they can, that's correct.
So this weekend
they can, that's correct. We can. not stop them this weekend.
Right.
The 10 days, I suppose, would run out before the next weekend.
Right.
And I don't know whether she'll be upheld or not. You know, I mean, number one, you got to remember, judges are supposed to not do what they think is what they'd like to see happen. They're supposed to rule as to what the law that they don't write, but the legislators do, requires. And it's very difficult. You have to be a real professional and very, you know, have enormous mental discipline to not let your own prejudices get in there. And I have no idea what Judge Pressler thinks about this, but she may feel that this is what the law. She feels this is what the law says, and then we'll find out afterwards. It's interesting. She, I think, started this whole 16 years with a ruling back 16 years ago, if I remember, and then
which was the
about,
same
about
ruling? It was the same ruling.
I don't remember exactly, but
right.
But then it was appealed and appealed and appealed, and we get here, and then somebody brings up a different subject. You know, will it take 16 years? No, because a lot of the arguments have already been heard and decided. So each time it gets shorter, but still we live in a society of laws. And I would argue that it's better that than the alternatives. The trouble is when the laws get in the way of what you'd like to have, everybody says, let's suspend the law. And I would argue that the Constitution, which is the ultimate body of laws here, prohibits or requires you to not have worship services in a public building. You can disagree with that, and that's what the courts are there to decide, not whether you're right or I'm right on a moral basis, but what does the Constitution say?
Speaking of laws and lawsuits, the lawsuit against the city and the hiring and the testing of the FDNY, Judge Garofas, was reading today, costing the city in overtime.
Cost a fortune.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
You know, we think he's 100% wrong. We think we'll win eventually. We are just not going to put racial quotas in, and that's exactly what he wants. I want, when you have a fire, the man or woman that comes bursting through that door to save your life to be the smartest person we can find with great training and leadership and equipment. I think that is what the fire department is today. It's the best fire department in the world with the best group of men and women, and I'm determined not to change it, not to use other objectives that you may have. The issue here is the test germane to the job? And the judge says, well, it, you know, just general IQ is not germane. I could not disagree more. In a world we live in with technology and hazmat and all of the things going on, you don't know what's on the other side of that door, and you can't train for everything. And therefore, a basic IQ test, to my way of thinking, is exactly what we should give. Now, people say IQ tests because some of the questions tend to be are predicated on life experiences, and not everybody has the same life experiences, therefore that the tests are biased. But, you know, so make your IQ test better. But it's fundamentally an IQ test we should do. For physical requirements, because it's a physical test too, that is pass-fail. You can, you know, the fire department says you got to carry.
You can lift it up.
You
got
to carry a 600-pound person on the back when you're carrying all your bunker gear as well, and you got to be able to run up the stairs to the Empire State Building in 37 seconds. Okay, whatever they decide, and everybody should take that test. Pass, fail. In fact, in the fire department, they keep working on physical activity, so you do not see firefighters out of shape. Because they really...
Rarely do you ever see
them. Very rarely, because they have to protect each other as well as save lives.
It's a military unit. It's just, you know, you're covering somebody's back all the time.
Right. So, it is a real team effort. When firefighters depend on each other, they know that guy behind them, a woman behind them, is going to be there. And so they train as a team, and they work as a team, and they eat as a team, and, you know, they joke around and build relationships and trust in each other. And we want to have a fire department that has the best and the brightest. We want to have a fire department judgment that it'd be great if more people applied. Nick Scapetta, who was fire commissioner for 8 years, worked as hard as anybody's ever seen to try to convince lots of people that this is a great job and they should apply, and then let the test figure out who the best are. And the diversity in the fire department is nowhere near the diversity in the general public. It's nowhere near the diversity in the police department. But it is getting better. But nevertheless, the problem before was not a bias in the test, I would argue. It was who was taking the test. And it just takes a while. You know, if you go, you'll see garages, for example. And you'll notice that lots of garages are run by same ethnicity. From some country. Why? Because they help each other and they find out there's a good gig and somebody hires them. And the same thing is true in the fire department, or the people know about the job. There is, it's, people say, oh, look, it's father, son passing down jobs. It isn't. It's, you have to take the same test. And it isn't that your father teaches you to put number 7 foam on number 3 oil. That's not it either. What it is the father and the son. Son looks at his father and says, this is a great job.
Yeah, it's an environment that I want to be in.
And so what Nick tried to do, and now Sal Cassano's been doing it as well, try to, and we have a public high school that tries to do this, to explain to people, this is a great job, more people should apply. And if more people apply, more people from every ethnic group will get through the test, but only the best and the brightest in every ethnic group, and that's what you should have.
All right, recommendation today that cancer be covered under the Zadroga bill. You have a thought on that?
Yeah. Absolutely. It should be up to the doctors. I mean, they've got to decide. You can't have, you don't do science by what I'd like to have happen. Let the doctors decide. They've got to decide whether to include cancer or any other condition. There's Dr. Howard of NIOSH who's looks at the relevant data. We've given all the data that they need, and they've got to make the decision whether, you know, and I have confidence in his integrity and professionalism. He's a real expert.
Okay. The phone lines are up. The questions are on the board. We will get to you and those in just a moment. 10 minutes before 9 o'clock, we're coming right back here on the John Gambling Show. After I tell you that we're brought to you by the new play, Look Back at Anger. For more info, visit roundabouttheater.org.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, it's your turn. Those of you on the board for Michael Bloomberg with the questions. And Michael in Far Rockaway, you're up first. You got the mayor. Go.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
A question. Why does the city continue to negotiate with the union and have as part of the contract that teachers must have, you know, union dues deducted from their salary?
It's state law. There are, what the issue is, what's called the right to work law. Some states have a right to work state. One state, I think it's Wisconsin, I'm not sure about that. Did they change to a right to work law, John? I'm not sure, Wisconsin. But some states have a right to work where you don't have to join, but New York is not one of them. New York, if the majority of, roughly works, if the majority of the members of a company or a bargaining, form of bargaining unit in the parlance of municipal workers, if they vote to do it, everybody has to, and it's just in state law. What the unions would say is if some people aren't covered, they get the benefit of what the dues-paying members can negotiate with their monies and power, but they're not paying their share. And it's just, you can talk to the state legislature if you don't think it's fair. You can argue it both ways, but that is the reason for what you ask.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. Let's see here. Number 3 would be Chris. Chris, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Mayor and John. I'm pretty upset about your decision to go ahead and support the DREAM Act. You're rewarding illegal behavior. I know John agrees with you on every single thing. He'll never say
anything. He does not. He does not.
You're driving people out of New York. And what kind of message are you sending? What are you sending about illegal
number
activity?
One, Chris, look. You can argue that the kids that would be covered by the DREAM Act came here illegally. Most of them were infants or, you know, so young. They didn't do it. Number 2, they're here. Do you want them to not have an education? They serve in the military. They're going to create businesses and jobs. Then we're not going to deport them. We're not going to deport 11 million people. And the kids, I think most people would say, maybe their parents broke the law, but the kids were brought by their parents. No court would find find that they broke the law. They may technically be here illegally, but not, but in, if you look at intent and what they did deliberately, they didn't do anything. And just plain and simple, if they're going to be here, don't you want them to be productive members of society? Don't you want them to have careers so that they can go out there and contribute rather than be a drag on society? You can make the case that we shouldn't do things for undocumented, although I'd give you an argument there that the government passed a law saying no and then deliberately didn't fund it, fund any enforcement so that everybody could get what they wanted. But certainly the kids, it's pretty hard to argue. And you know, these are kids who will create companies and create jobs. And I don't have any apologies for supporting the DREAM Act, you know, and certainly hard to argue they did something wrong.
All right, Bridget, you are next with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Morning.
I'd like your suggestion. Last year, my 24-year-old niece, who loves children, completed her master's degree from the Hunter College School of Education.
Good school.
Yes, she's also certified in special ed. She and her fellow graduates are technologically modern, creative young adults ready to bring their energy and passion to the New York City public school system. However, there are no jobs, and now you're losing some of these wonderful people to other careers.
How can there be no jobs? I mean,
because
we just have too many, the competition.
We don't have enough money, but one of the things that will come out of the new evaluation system, or in these cases, these 33 schools, there will be new openings, and we will go out and recruit. And what Bridget's niece has got to face is that these are very, very desirable jobs. People from all over the country want to come here and be a teacher in the New York City school system. They want to work with the best, and I don't think anybody's ever put together a group of teachers like we have. Not everyone. When you have 75,000, there's always a couple bad apples, and Dennis is out dealing with one of them at a school today that did something despicable. But the Bridget is going to have the opportunity to apply soon, and you know, and there's some turnover anyway, so, you know, she should call 311 and they'll tell you how to apply, although I'm sure Bridget's, if she went to Hunter for a master's, she knows how to do it.
You got a fast tweet there, or because we're almost out of
time? Somebody tweeted about C40 cities and why do cities share goals in terms of the environment. You know, some cities have had experiences with turning waste into energy or cleaning and making the streets move faster or stopping polluting the air through building heating systems, and it's good to learn, and I'm going to go to a C40 meeting. It's in Rio, I think, this year. It's not a C40 meeting, but Rio plus 20, and the C40 will be there, and I'll represent them.
All right, we'll see you next Friday.
I can't wait.
All right, have yourself a very good week. There you go, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Michael Mulgrew, the other side of that evaluation question, coming up after the news.